From the Lynn de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, right here in Champaign County. We'll hear again today from the Farm Dog team traveling across Brazil. Gary Schnitke has an update from Mato Grosso. That's the number one corn and soybean growing region in the nation. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll check the weather forecast from the Canadian prairies to the Eastern Corn Belt with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn at the CME Group settled $5.94 a bushel. That was up 9.25 today. September at 5.22¾, 3¾ higher in December futures, up 2.5 cents at $5.20¾ of a cent for the corn. July soybeans at $14.04, down 10¼ a bushel. The August 10¾ lower. Settlement price there at $13.36¾. And November beans, $12.50¾, the new crop down 3¾ of a cent. Bean meal up 50 cents at $4.19.50. The bean oil at $52.05, 99 cents lower. July soft red winter wheat down 2¼, settled at $6.41¼. The hard red a penny lower at $8.55¼ for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at $163, 92.5 cents lower. Feeders in the lead August at $225.15, 97.5 lower. And lean hogs were down 22.5 cents. They settled $84.17 per 100 pounds. Crude oil at $72.44 a barrel, $1.28 lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.39 a gallon, just about unchanged. The gasoline at the wholesale price, $2.49¼ a gallon. That's a penny and a tenth higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 33,424, about 214 points lower. Greg Johnson of TGM, Total Grain Marketing, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening. Thanks, Greg, for joining us from the elevator here in Champaign County. I bet farmers have been calling, maybe if they've got a little time, and said, now, what do I do for old and new crop? And probably way more worried about old crop than they are new crop, I would think.
Yeah, you're right, Todd. The good news is most of the bushels, I'd say we're probably 85% sold on old crop corn, farmers are, and probably even 90-95% on the old crop beans. So there's not a ton left, but you're right, the bushels that are left, obviously they're wishing they would have sold those a month and a half ago. But what we are telling them now is, now that we've sold off so much and we've got the growing season ahead of us, now we just have to hope that we had to get our normal weather scare somewhere along the way, but use that as an opportunity to make some catch-up sales, get rid of the old crop corn and beans, and start a little bit more heavily sold on the new crop corn and beans.
There are two next steps, I suppose, that fundamentally the marketplace is looking for, many more, but fundamentally the second crop or safrinha corn out of Brazil. And of course, USDA on Friday will release the first monthly WASDE that will include a new crop supply and demand table. What are your expectations?
Well, 17 out of the last 17 years, the government has used the Ag Outlook Forum's numbers for bean yield, and 8 out of the last 9 years, the USDA has used the Ag Outlook Forum corn yield. So since the Ag Outlook Forum was 181.5, I think there's a pretty good chance we'll see 181.5 come out on corn. And, we can argue whether that's too high or too low, but, the bottom line is that's where we're going to start, and we'll adjust as the growing season progresses. So that's kind of the supply side of the equation. And as far as demand is concerned, the government's probably going to, be a little conservative on exports and ethanol. Feed usage could increase a little bit. The bottom line is with a normal crop, and that's all you can do at this point is just assume a normal yield. Carryout goes from 1.3 billion this year to 1.2 $9 billion next year, maybe even $2 billion, depending on how big the crop is and on the demand. And the soybeans, on the other hand, this year we've got a 220 million bushel carryout. You could get that closer to 300 million next year if we have a normal crop. I guess the one difference between corn and beans at this point is the demand side of the equation is still there for soybeans. So, and that stocks number is extremely tight when you take it as a percentage of use on soybeans. So a little bit more friendly on soybeans at this point than corn. We need to either see demand pick up either via the ethanol market or exports. Neither one of those has been, you know, we saw a little burst of enthusiasm back in February, March, but here in April and May, export sales have been getting canceled. Ethanol usage has been lagging. So the demand side of the equation has not been helpful for corn. And as a result, prices have done what they've done.
I always think back to what Darrell Good would tell me at the beginning of the season every year, that the crop is normal until it is not. And certainly to this point, it appears that the corn crop and the soybean crop in the United States is normal, and it is as well in Brazil. And then you have to market using those fundamentals. What should producers do?
Well, As I said earlier, I think we need to, now that we've sold off as much as we have, we need to wait for a little bit of a bounce. Even in big years, we do get those bounces. This year is shaping up a lot like 2013, coming off of two high-priced $7 corn years in 2011 and 2012. 2013 had a transition down until about the May 20th period, and then we had a 50-cent rally and before we continued the downward trend lower. And so, you know, this year we started at the same price level, $6 corn for new crop futures. In January, we've gone down to the 520 level, just like we did in 2013. I'm hoping that this is a repeat of 2013 and we can get a 40-50 cent bounce, but we definitely want to take advantage of that because, like you said, as Darrell reminded us so often, you have to assume a normal crop until we can prove otherwise. And if we have a normal crop, we're going to have something close to a 2 billion bushel carryout, and corn prices will be below $5. So I know farmers aren't real excited about 550 corn, but it's certainly better than 475 corn.
Hey, thanks much.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. We'll continue now our conversations with the FarmDoc team as they're making their way through Brazil. They're in Mato Grosso this week. I spoke with Gary Schnittke earlier this morning about what they saw on the farms yesterday.
Yesterday, we continued our visit with the Ferjain group, which is 68,000 hectares of soybeans, and most of that are now double crop corn as well. They are in the center part of the Mato Grosso, and we got to see their, we went out and saw some cornfields that they have. We talked to them, and they showed us their technology that they use, and they do a lot of crop scouting, and it's all electronically captured. So the people at the headquarters can see what's going on out in the field. Then we went to a ethanol plant. And that is run by FS, which is a individual out of Iowa, is one of the principal movers of that. It's a large plant, and they're processing corn for ethanol and obviously getting some DDGs out of that. After that, we took a ride up to Sinops on a two-lane road. It's the main highway, We're all, and it has a lot of truck traffic on it, and we got to see even that paved road is full of trucks and cars. And in fact, there was a wreck, an ethanol truck spilled over, and we had to take some back roads to get to Sinops. After that, we had a meeting with Evandro Giannacini, and he is a farmer here in Sinop. We are now officially in the Amazon biome, so they get more rain here, and we're going to continue talking to him today. And he does non-GMO soybeans on his acres.
Interesting. Tell me about the logistics from yesterday just a bit. So the data collection and what they can see from the centralized office space.
They have all their farms mapped, and then they have it so that they can focus in on the farm. And there's a complete record of, and they do scouting of those farms. So anytime an agronomist goes to their to the field, and they do that quite regularly, they note what they see in that software. And if there's any problems in that, that they note where that is at. And then they use that to, so they showed us an example of where they found a hot point on one of their farms, and their farms are 10,000 hectares. So it's, you know, and then they, you know, there was a series of the same fungus showing up in this area. So they went and sprayed that area. They use a lot of software in managing their crops. So, and it's the typical sort of thing that we see in the U.S. Plus the mapping, plus the agronomist going out and making notes of what they see. So all of that's available to the agronomist at headquarters, and then they can begin to make decisions based on that.
And do you know how that works with the labor they have in the field and how much labor they use?
This farm has 68,000 hectares, which it works out to be 168,000 acres. That's divided into 13 units, and they have 600 full-time people and 400 more seasonal. They use much more labor. Even though they're larger farms, if you do the division and see that their employees per acres, it's in a 168 to 200 acre range. So they're using a lot more employees than we do in the United States. A lot of we told the main farmer what our we told him that our full-time employees make $50,000 to $60,000, and he said, well, that's more than the board of directors, the CEO makes at their farm. So their wages are much lower than in the United States, and they use a lot of them. So each one of these 13 units would have agronomists, probably two or three. And then there's also two or three agronomists at the main headquarters.
What do you think takeaways so far have been for you?
So this area, it's interesting. We've got, this is, we're talking to the first generation of farmers that were here. That's really interesting. Arado told us a story of he coming here. There was no electricity in town. Their house didn't have electricity or anything, and they were so strapped for cash, he had to sell his car to buy diesel fuel to put in his crop. And he's gotten that up to, you know, 68,000 acres or 68,000 hectares. The transformation of the area, and most of these individuals came from southern Brazil and moved up here, and just those stories are interesting. So they also, this firm, unlike a lot of other firms, don't want to move out of Mato Grosso. They feel that they know the area here well, and that there's opportunities to grow here as well. My guess is Illinois would have looked very much the same as here had we started development 100 years later. The other thing is just the logistic issues. And you can see it on the roads and you can see it everywhere, just the logistic problems are much larger here than they are in the United States. One of the ethanol individuals, a guy from Iowa, Brian Mark, said there's two things that Brazil did not do. They did not invest in their infrastructure, and they didn't invest in their education. And those things are two things that the United States did, and that's the big difference between the United States and here.
That was Gary Snicky, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. He and the Farm Doc team are traveling across Brazil again this week. We'll hear more from him tomorrow and Friday. And then there will, on May 18th, that's a Thursday, be a webinar. You can check out the Farm Doc website to get yourself signed up for that. It'll also be in the schedule on our homepage at willag.org. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Hi, Drew. Thank you for being with us. Let's start in the growing regions of North America. You pay special attention each year to the production areas of the Canadian prairie. What is it like at this time?
Well, they are still teetering on the brink of disaster in some parts of the prairies. In particular, we're talking about the interior southern and east central parts of Alberta and west central and interior southwestern parts of Saskatchewan. Some of those areas are in their seventh year of drought, and it's been miraculous in the sense that they are all still in business. Because there's been either, just a real special last-minute rain that has saved them in each of these years, or, of course, there's the miracle of crop insurance, which helps a lot. But anyway, they're still out there, and they are teetering on a pretty serious dry subsoil right now. There is nothing down deep in the ground. And they were quite cold earlier in the spring, and so the temperatures have warmed up rather dramatically, actually. And so they're all out in these fields working aggressively right now. And the concern that I have is that in these areas with limited subsoil moisture, what will happen if they get one decent little rain that germinates that crop and allows it to emerge, and then there's nothing else for a while, and they go back into hot, dry, they're going to lose that crop. So I'm really quite concerned about that. Now, it's not necessarily a tremendous sized area that is that critically dry, but there is a fair amount of that region that needs to be monitored. There's other areas around close by that have a little more subsoil moisture, but have been drying down steadily in the past couple of weeks. We had a heat wave at the beginning of the month, and temperatures got into the 80s and a couple of extremes in the lower 90s in Alberta and western Saskatchewan that really zapped a lot of the moisture out of the ground. And they've been working real aggressively since then. They had a little bit of rain this past week in central and western parts of Alberta. So it wasn't a big soaking, but it was enough to do what I was talking about, stimulate some germination and emergence. And now there's a new ridge of high pressure that's supposed to evolve late this weekend and go through the first half of next week. And we'll see and hear about this. It'll start in the Pacific Northwest, and we'll see temperatures in Washington State getting in the 90s, and it's very dry there in the Yakima Valley. But anyway, that will extend north into British Columbia and Alberta by the time we get to the end of the weekend, and then it will expand eastward into western Saskatchewan. So by the time we talk next week at this point, those temperatures are going to be back into the 80s and 90s again, and no rain is expected after tomorrow. And so there is a lot of reason to be concerned about some of those areas in the western part of the prairies. Now, Manitoba's in better shape. They've actually had a little bit of a surplus of moisture for a little while this spring, and they're a little behind in their planting, but they are catching up pretty quickly. And as long as they can avoid rain here in the next couple of weeks, they should get back on schedule. And I think that will happen.
When you talk about the crops and needing to germinate, is this sunseed, sunflower, canola, rapeseed, soybean, spring wheat, or all of the above?
Well, almost all of the above. The crops that are most of concern is the canola crop, because canola is planted very shallowly, if that's a word. They only plant that crop down the first couple of inches of the soil, depending on the situation. So that crop will germinate and emerge very quickly in an environment like this. But anyway, we're talking about canola and wheat, and they have some peas there, and then lentils. Those are the crops that are most popular in that particular part of the prairies. Now, for the eastern part of the prairies, where we don't have the drought in Manitoba and eastern Saskatchewan, that's where a lot of the beans and corn is produced. Although I have to admit, they are planting corn farther to the west these days with all the warmer bias that they've had in recent years. But the focus is on the east, though, for those crops, and they are not involved in the drought.
Into the Dakotas, not droughty, and Minnesota. Tell me about the weather for the next couple of weeks and what conditions are like.
Yes. We've had a big problem with planting in North Dakota and Minnesota. Very little crop has been put into the ground thus far. And there's a lot of concern about that situation. We have another large storm that's going to occur here as we go from Friday into Sunday. The odds are pretty high that we're going to see enough rain to keep the ground saturated in those areas, or resaturated as the case may be. The odds are pretty high that we'll see 1 to 3 inches of rain across a fair amount of that region. Now, it's not all terrible news, because eastern South Dakota and the western parts of the Dakotas and in eastern Montana, those areas are still running shortages of moisture. So getting 1 to 3 inches of rain right now would be just about ideal for their outlook down the road. It's just that eastern half to two-thirds of North Dakota and Minnesota that really have a problem with being too wet, and they will likely stay that way for a while.
What do we see in the rest of the Midwest and the Corn Belt?
You know, the thing that stands out most significantly in the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest is the lighter than usual rains that have occurred for multiple weeks. The entire month of April, even late March, we saw lighter than normal rains in quite a few areas. It was mostly in April that we saw this, and we're still doing it. We've got good moisture. I know some folks are probably scratching their head going, my moisture profile is perfect. And indeed, that is the case. But there are some folks out there that are making note of the fact that rains have been lighter than normal over multiple weeks. And that always raises a little concern, because if we don't get normal rains in the spring, you know, what happens in the summer is the idea. And we do have an ongoing bias for below normal precipitation as we go forward through this summer, based on a lot of these years in the past where we had that multi-year La Nina that abates and moves into an El Nino in the following year. The bias is for less than normal precipitation to occur across a fair amount of the Western Corn Belt. And typically in an El Nino year, you tend to get lighter rains even in the Eastern Midwest. So, we're not in an El Nino yet, and it'll take a while for that bias to show up. But these other statistics suggest that we will see lighter than normal rains for a while. But the bottom line for planting is perfect. I don't think we're going to have any big issues with getting the rest of the crop in the ground in the lower eastern Midwest. The question is what are we going to do for moisture in the summer if we stay lighter than normal on precipitation? We'll have to get some well-timed rains to maintain the status quo.
Hey, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Just a reminder that there is a monthly USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate that's due out Friday at 11 a.m. Central Time. We'll delay the recording of Commodity Week until after that release and then post it to the website on Friday afternoon. Of course, you can hear it on our home station and many of these radio stations of that day or over the weekend. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.